You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Community Connection SmartCast Microlearning podcast series titled Realizing the Potential of GLP-1 Receptor Agonists in Type 2 Diabetes, Partnering with Patients to Improve Glycemic and Cardiovascular Outcomes, hosted by Med Learning Group. This series is directed towards endocrinologists, family practice physicians, internal medicine physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and other clinicians who provide primary care services, as well as patients with type 2 diabetes. The focus on this podcast series is to highlight the patient voice for healthcare professionals who care for patients with type 2 diabetes. Joining me today is Joanne.
Thank you.
Could you please speak to how you were diagnosed with diabetes initially?
It was probably maybe 20, 25 years ago. And everyone else in my family had it. And I just kept saying I was not going to get it. But unfortunately, I got it after I had an increased amount of thirstiness and getting up during the night 2 and 3 times to go to the bathroom. I finally relented and went to the doctor.
So you certainly were showing some symptoms. And you did mention it ran in your family. Do you know of any other risk factors that you might have had?
Well, not that I can think of. I mean, it started with my grandfather and then my mom and her brother and sister, and then both my brother and sister.
So there's certainly a longstanding history. And I remember the first time we connected, you told me about your brother and sister who passed away. And I extend my condolences to you and your family. And you mentioned that there was non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver and a heart attack in addition to the diabetes.
Yes, my brother had the non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver, plus he was a diabetic. And then my sister was 58 years old, and she had a massive heart attack. She also was a diabetic, but that was not her first heart attack. She had had probably 2 before that, and maybe her first one around the age of 52.
Oh, wow. She was so young. I'm so sorry. And, you know, this is exactly why we're doing this podcast today. And we are certainly tying together those linkages between diabetes and cardiovascular risks. So I really thank you for sharing your story and diving into some of your family history. Do you mind telling us if you have any other medical conditions that would put you at risk for type 2 diabetes or anything that could have complicated your diabetes diagnosis?
I've had a few bouts of colitis. I've been hospitalized 3 times for the colitis. Each hospital stay was, I believe, about 4 days. I currently do not take any medication for it, and it has been probably about 3 years since I had my last flare-up of colitis that required hospitalization. I have had a few flare-ups, but that would be because of something that I ate that I probably shouldn't have, like popcorn. Other than that, my health is fairly good besides the diabetes.
Well, I'm glad to see everything is getting better, and you seem to be a little bit more conscious of your food intake, both for your colitis and managing that, but I'm sure there's some ties there that help manage your diabetes as well.
Correct.
And you mentioned a little bit of concern about your children and their risk for diabetes and it passing along the family.
Yes, I have 2 daughters. One is 43 and the other will be 40 next week. And they're both a little overweight. And my youngest had a baby 2 years ago and she had gestational diabetes while she was pregnant. When I was pregnant with my youngest, I also had gestational diabetes. And before I was diagnosed, my doctor used to tell me, you know, if you'd lose 20 pounds, you probably would reduce your risk of becoming a diabetic, at least as soon as I did. And of course, I did not follow those instructions. And now we see where I'm at.
So in addition to the family history, you also experienced some early symptoms of this coming along. And I imagine that's really hard to manage, you know, especially while being pregnant, especially for the first time.
It was because I had to stay laying flat. I seen a specialist and he said, you don't have to lay in bed, but you have to lay flat. So like I could lay on the floor, I could lay on the couch. And I also had a 3-year-old. So it was quite interesting.
Hard to keep busy. Well,
So I guess we got kind of lucky. My husband was laid off at the time, so he was able to take care of the three-year-old and take care of me.
Let's dive into some of the treatments that you started to control your blood glucose levels at the time. So I know this was a long time ago, about 20, 25 years ago. We'll be diving back, but I think you remembered it was initially on metformin, I believe.
Yes. She started me out on 1,000 milligrams twice a day. And this was through my primary care. And I did try to diet. Unfortunately, I didn't do as well with dieting. And my sugar just was not getting under control. My numbers, I believe my A1C was in the high sevens. If I remember, it was like 7.8. And so then she switched me to glibretin, I believe it's called.
Yes, glibride. I think that's in combination with metformin.
Correct. And then after that, it seemed like my numbers were still high. And so I started going to the endocrinology department at Henry Ford Hospital. And I started seeing a nurse practitioner who does endocrinology.
Wonderful. So I'm glad you got the recommendation to see the endocrinologist, but your primary care physician was also included throughout your care, which is wonderful.
Correct.
Later on, I believe you switched to the injection?
Yes, I did.
Dulaglutide injection?
Correct.
Perfect. And that was, I believe, one time a week?
That was one time a week. And I still did the 500 milligrams of the metformin, 500 in the morning, 500 in the afternoon or at bedtime.
And how long were you on that regimen with the injection and the metformin together?
About 3 years. And in that meantime, I did go to Weight Watchers and I lost about 30 pounds. And then I participated in a clinical trial where I wore the meter on my arm and they could see that my numbers were high in the morning. So they increased the metformin to 1,000 milligrams in the morning and 1,000 at night. And I did that, I think it was about 3 years. And then they switched me. I think it's been a little over, I believe, maybe about a year and a half to what I take now.
Which would be the semaglutide injection. And that I believe is one time a week as well?
Yes, that's once a week. And I take the metformin 500 in the morning and 500 at night. The reason they decreased that was because my A1C got down to 6.1. And then through the course of taking that, I lost a lot of weight, like about 40 or 45 pounds. And so my primary care was very concerned. So she referred me to a hematologist, but everything came back clear. And my endocrinologist said that the weight loss was very healthy. So I'm doing well now.
Wonderful. And I'm glad to see your primary care, you know, still chimed in and presented their concerns and the whole team worked together. And congratulations on your weight loss.
Thank you.
And I'm glad your numbers are looking great and you got down to that 500 milligram dosage.
Yep, that's where I'm at now.
Awesome. Congratulations. Do you mind diving into some of what your experience was like being part of a clinical trial?
I really enjoyed that because I was able to check my sugar anytime I wanted to know what it was, you know, and I guess I could do that now by poking my finger, but it was definitely very easy to just use the little machine and put it on my arm. So I did enjoy being in that study.
Wonderful. I imagine the finger pricking is no fun.
Exactly.
So let's jump again. So fast forward again to present day and you're on the semaglutide injection. Are you experiencing any side effects or did you experience any side effects when you first started?
I did in the beginning. I was very nauseated in the morning and I would, even at lunchtime, I wasn't hungry. So I wasn't eating hardly anything. And my endocrinologist was like, you need to eat a little something in the morning because that's what helps the medicine work. Plus that will help with the nausea. So I now eat about a half a slice of toast or a few crackers in the morning if I'm nauseated. And then I do eat a much smaller lunch and dinner.
Oh, perfect. So I'm glad that, you know, having something in your tummy really helped that out.
Yes.
Based on our previous conversations, your weight loss has been consistent and you've been steady on the semaglutide, which is wonderful. And now you're testing your blood sugar not as often, I imagine?
Just once a day, and I rotate it between breakfast, lunch, and supper.
Oh, perfect. So I know you were, I remember your readings were a little high in the mornings, and now it's good to keep track of different times of the day.
Yes, they are still high in the morning. Like Monday morning, I believe it was like 163, but that was at 6 a.m. And then when I checked it at lunchtime, just to make sure it was down, it was like 92.
And overall, you seem to be in very good hands, and the multidisciplinary approach to care, having providers from different perspectives connected into your healthcare system, has really been a huge help, it looks like.
It has.
You seem to be in really good contact with your primary care and your endocrinologist, and I'm glad they work together.
It's worked out well.
Wonderful. And I want to dive back a little bit when, you know, throughout your diagnosis in your lifetime, I know you did Weight Watchers and that helped a lot, you know, guide you with that initial weight loss. Was diabetes education specifically ever offered to you, or was that something that you wanted to seek?
I don't recall it being offered. I did see a nutritionist when I first started going to the endocrinology department, but as far as the, you know, the educational portion that I've never done.
Okay. And the nutritionist was helpful. Did they said you, you know, give you some guidelines on how to follow, and, you know, what really made you make those lifestyle changes that you've implemented today?
Well, because I just know my family history and I know what has, you know, happened over the last 8 years or so. And I have young grandkids. I want to be here for a long time.
Absolutely. So in addition to some of the eating habits that you've changed, did you introduce any other lifestyle changes, perhaps more physical activity to assist you?
I try to walk. I don't walk as much as I should. I do walk some with my husband. He has a, he's also a diabetic and he has a bad heart. And so he's very diligent about walking 5 miles a day. So I try to join him on some of those smaller walks, but not as much as I should because I still work. And I tell people at work that I work up on the second floor and it's 20 steps up and 20 steps down. So I do get some exercise.
Oh, that's good. Taking the stairs is a huge step, right? In and of itself.
That's the only way there is to get up there.
Oh, we don't have an elevator even there.
No, we don't.
Well, I'm glad you and your husband have each other to support each other through this journey. And Joanne, I really just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and how you have successfully managed your diabetes.
I appreciate the offer. Thank you.
Of course. And I want to also thank our listeners for joining us today. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Novo Nordisk, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.